The world has shut down. Traveling is out the window right now. It's not even an option for a while. People are working from home and it's become increasingly apparent that some jobs, if not all, don't necessarily require a brick and mortar structure to function. It ties in with travel if you think about it, because a very common, very pertinent question that comes up a lot, which I've also had to answer from time to time, is how do you travel while maintaining a job? How do you make money on the go? How do you travel and earn at the same time? It's a dream, isn't it? To be able to work from a white sand beach in Mexico, or a cute cafe in Bali, or from the mountains. To be wherever you want to be and still be able to earn your money. Truth is, a lot of work can be remote, and there are people who are acing it, who have been acing it since years. Travel Tales and Takes with Preeti brings to you stories of wonder from lands far and near, stories of inspiration from people ever so dear, and a little bit of me, Preeti, also known as Peppy Travel Girl. Joining me on today's episode is someone who has made travel a way of life while working on the go for over 12 years. Kaushal Karkhanis is a digital nomad, a graphic designer since 22 years, a travel content creator since 11, a community fiend, and all in all, a slow traveler who has managed to manifest the dream of working from anywhere and living the life exactly how he wants to. Kaushal, I'm so happy to have you on this episode of Travels, Tales and Takes. It's an absolute pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, Preeti, thank you so much for that wonderful introduction. I think it's the same for me. I mean, I'm delighted to be a part of this podcast. I've been following it since the first one, and I'm a big fan. So thank you for having me.
Oh, yay. Thank you. I'm so happy to hear that you've been listening to the episodes. It just makes me so joyful on the inside, like a little child.
Oh, it's amazing. And podcasting is my favorite medium these days. So it's amazing. Loving it.
Very happy to hear that. Very, very happy to hear that. It just makes me super thrilled. So I just want to dive right in, because this is a question that, you know, as a traveler, you and I have both probably been answering, or we've gotten quite a lot. And I figure that who better to actually take us through this entire journey, because you've been doing it for 12 years now and you've really crafted a lifestyle out of it. So before I jump into the obvious questions, I just want my listeners to just know a little bit more about you. So how was Exotic Gringo born, and where did your entire journey with travel begin?
Okay. So, my own journey with travel started, I think, back in 2007. 2007 was when I did like 4 trips to Goa: Jan, Feb, November, December. And needless to say, Goa is my favorite place in the whole world, even today. But 2007, I did 2 trips. Two different destinations. One was Goa 4 times, and one was Bhutan. And I think that's when my love for traveling and traveling long term or slow solo travel started. But 2008 was the life changing trip, which was South America, which was 40 days turned into 3 months, and then it went to 6 months. So that is where Exotic Gringo was born. It's an appellation which I got from the people of South America, because they were like, hey, we don't get too many gringos or too many foreigners from India. So for us, you are like an exotic gringo. And I was like, what is this gringo? And that's when I realized that gringo is a word for the way we say firangs. And that's how the brand was born. And I was like, okay, this is great. I am Exotic Gringo.
Wow, that's quite a story. And since then, it's just stuck, right? I love
it. Totally. Totally. It was an appellation given to me by them. It was not even something which I created.
No, that's awesome. And I'm sure it's come from a really memorable trip, because you just said you went for 40 days, you extended it for 3 months, and you ended up staying for 6. What happened? Yes.
I could go on and on about this story, but to give you a very basic gist, it was me reaching out to a friend through Couchsurfing. Well, me reaching out to a random person on Couchsurfing. He's now a lifelong friend. He's now nothing less than a brother to me. I just reached out to him as just to have somebody who I would be able to reach out to when I go to a totally different continent and new country. When you do something like that, you know, and in a country where you don't speak the language, you have no idea about their culture and whatever, except for the samba and carnival stuff which you've seen on television. I wanted somebody local who I could trust and reach out to. And then this guy, instead of just meeting me, he said, you know what, dude, why are you staying in a hostel? You should just come and stay over, and come stay over for a whole month if you want. And that whole thing changed my life completely. And my travels changed from 30 days to 3 months, and 40 days to 3 months, and 3 months to 6 months. Not staying with him, but the plans just kept changing because of that.
And all of this was a last minute decision.
Yes, all of these were random decisions. In fact, there's a movie called The Art of Travel. And when I watched that movie after coming back, the gist of the movie, The Art of Travel, was that the art of travel is to deviate from your plans. And that statement has stuck with me as well, because I was like, hell yeah, I mean, this is exactly what I have lived. The art of travel is indeed to deviate, and to be able to deviate and change your plans on the fly.
Yeah, and you totally did that. I think a lot of us would think twice before we change our plans of a 40-day trip into 3 months, you know, at a stretch, and then from there, just double that. So yep. What was that trip like for you? Where did you go? What did you do? Who did you meet? And like a pre-South America Kaushal to a post-South America Kaushal, what are the differences there?
I would say, I think you nailed it. It's exactly how it was. It was pre-South America Kaushal, and I would almost call myself a version different from what I was before the trip. Because before that, I was, you know, I literally say that trip changed the fabric of my personality. Because it was a crazy decision to do something bold as that. For someone who's led a really boring life before that, just working in the corporate life for the last 7 years, eight years before that, nonstop, without any break. And from that to becoming somebody who's just, you know, blowing up all the hard-earned money and coming back flat broke, but living the life that I've always, you know, only dreamed of. So, in fact, it's perhaps something I never even dreamt of. It was something really crazy. But I did that because of two reasons. One is because I was at a time and age when I could do something as crazy as that, because I had responsibilities before that. And then I knew that once I go a little older, I will have more responsibilities. So that was a sweet spot when I could go, like Girls Gone Wild. It was Kaushal Gone Wild. I was just going out and living the life that I thought, you know, it should be something which would be memorable. And why I say it changed the fabric of my personality is because the core thing it changed in me was it taught me that you can do anything you want to do if you set your mind to it, right? That you can, nothing is impossible in the way. That if I've gone ahead and lived in South America for 6 months, you know, the whole world is open now. Now nothing else is as difficult or impossible.
I think I understand. Sometimes these impulse decisions where you don't, you know, overthink it, or you plan things so much that you have 1,000 other things at the back of your head, somehow end up being the best decisions you could have taken. And really, like you said, change the fabric of your personality. So yep. You said that you came back flat out broke. It's something that is terrifying, to be honest, to have just like a zero number in your bank account. But how did you make your peace with that? And what changed? Like, how are you okay with having nothing in your bank account and having to start from scratch again?
Oh, it's because I have seen that before. Because like I said, I had responsibilities before that. That was because I had seen my father's business crash from a well-built business of 17, 18 years to just going, you know, under the whatever, like literally going bust. And when you see that something like that can be handled, I was like, I want to make sure that I can train myself and my mind to be able to bounce back from any kind of issue or a problem where you're not financially dependent on. You should be able to bounce back from zero just with your own will, as well as building things which will enable you to bounce back. So I was sort of training myself that, hey, I mean, Dad had a tough time to bounce back, but I want to make sure that if I were to do something in my life where I hit zero levels, I should be able to bounce back. So this was, in a way, an experiment for me as well. It was a lot of letting go and also coming out as somebody who's just led great 20s, because my 20s started really boring in life. It was all about just, you know, being there for family. And I mean, it was great responsibility wise, but for myself, it was a little tough because I would not go on and be partying and, you know, just living a carefree 20s. But my 20s had to end on a grand note. And that's what I did for myself. And at the same time, it also kind of helped me train myself to be able to pick myself up from, you know, from any pitfalls that may occur.
I think the ability to be that resilient only comes when you've actually dealt with that level of responsibility. And I feel like it's a very good foundation to actually start building something on, in the sense that even you have started from scratch, literally, and you've built your own little empire over here. So while I understand, you know, the thought process.
I wouldn't say empire, but I am with you. Yeah.
It's your empire, right? Like you're literally doing.
Well, yeah. Sure.
Oh, you're being modest, Kaushal. So you had all of these thoughts in your head already in South America, right? At one point, you must have been like, you know what? Screw it. I'm staying here. I don't care if I go broke. I'll build something for myself. So what was your thought process like that actually pushed you to wanting to build something on your own and then subsequently move into what is now your location-independent lifestyle?
So let me rewind that a little bit. So it's not like I came back and then started on my own. It was the other way around. I was already on my own. So the before South America, I was my last job was Microsoft, where I was there 2005 and 2006. And then 2006 and 7, I was already on my own. So I had, and at that time, I actually forgot to mention one very important aspect that helped me or that ratified my decision of being a location independent person. I discovered a book by Timothy Ferris, who's known as like the unofficial leader of the digital nomad lifestyle, or I would even say the official leader of the digital nomad lifestyle, Tim Ferriss. He wrote a book called The 4-Hour Work Week. I think it was released in 2004, 5 or 6, I don't remember. But I discovered it in 2006, just after quitting. In fact, after quitting Microsoft, I discovered two books. One was called The 4-Hour Work Week, which I just picked up at the bookstore. I didn't buy it, but I got the gist of it. And I was like, yeah, this is exactly what I want to be doing. And the second one was Leaving Microsoft to Change the World. So it was a pretty, pretty interesting serendipity to find these two books. So these things really helped me to set myself onto this path where I said I can create my own sort of a journey. I don't know if that answers your question.
In a way, it does. So these were enablers, I would say, right? Mm-hmm. They kind of forgot. Yeah. So did they get you started on the journey, or did you already have maybe an idea that, you know, you might want to do something like this?
Neither, I would say, because they helped me ratify or at the same time inspire me. That they definitely did, both these books. Especially Leaving Microsoft to Quit the World was a pretty interesting book. It was written by this gentleman called John Wood, who went on to create Room to Read, which is a great organization which creates libraries and schools for kids in countries like India and Nepal and other countries. So these were great experiences and inspirational people, as well as Richard Branson's Losing My Virginity, which was a great book, which I picked up at that time. So all these three people, I would say Richard Branson, Tim Ferriss, and John Wood, were pretty instrumental in just inspiring me to create my own path.
So how did you start then?
Okay, so when I got back from South America, the first things that were running in my mind was, this was amazing. This was a life-changing thing that has happened. How do I now continue this and make it more sustainable, right? How can I go out and travel like this and at the same time make money on the go? So the first thing I did was, this was actually at the behest of my younger brother. He was like, he's always a smarter one. And he recommended, why don't you just pick up a laptop? Because you've been stuck in one place because you have a computer. You should just get a laptop and invest in one. That was the first thing I did. And then I moved to Bangalore. This was because there was a friend's house where I had partied when I was in Microsoft back in Bangalore in 2005-06. And this house was a friend's house, which I absolutely adored. And she incidentally had just gotten married and moved to London. And she said, hey, my house is up for rent. Would anybody be interested? And I took up that opportunity, moved to Bangalore. It was a fantastic place to experiment. And then I had my laptop with me. So I started working from Bangalore first. So my first digital nomad experiment started with Bangalore. And then I moved on to Goa. Bangalore was good and bad. I had some projects in hand. In 2009, it was not as easy to convince clients saying that, hey, I'm in Bangalore and I'm in Goa and I will do your work, because they would just laugh first, saying, yeah, right, you're in Goa and you're going to work for us. Today, it has almost become a compulsion, right, for us, or we don't have a choice or an option. We have to work from home while we are stuck in this pandemic. But back then, it was frowned upon or judged or doubted. So it was a tough and challenging time. I would again come back to my zero levels, which is why I said that I wanted to train myself to build that kind of resilience that you should be able to. So one of the key facets of the digital nomad lifestyle is minimalism, right? Which means that you should have as minimal possessions as possible, which will enable you to be that agile, that you can just pick up your stuff, two little bags, ideally one, that you can just lug around and move from one place to another. So that Bangalore experiment and then the Goa experiment, that helped build the foundations for this kind of lifestyle for me. What I would just cut down, and also I had a very eccentric father. Well, I have a very eccentric father who would just keep, taking my stuff and just dumping them somewhere or just giving them away. So I'm pretty used to not having my things around me. So I have just the bare basics, which can fit in one bag, which I can just, keep in cabin baggage and move from one place to another at the, within half an hour. So if you ask me to move cities or countries today, I can move in half an hour.
Wow. I can't even imagine doing that. I cannot imagine doing that.
Well, it comes with practice, I guess, because I've been doing this for the last, since 2009. So 11 years, technically. You said 12 earlier. I think there was a slight miscalculation. Maybe it started 12 years ago, but technically 11. Or maybe my maths is bad. I don't know. 2009.
Okay. So 11 to 12 years, you've been on the go. That's so you right. Started in Bangalore. Yeah. Then you moved to Goa, which is your favorite place in the entire planet. And where next? Because you've been all over the world. You've gone back to South America. I don't even know how many times you've been in Southeast Asia. You've covered a very, very big part of the world, which is commendable because you also possess an Indian passport. So how did you manage all of this along with working on the go?
A lot of failed experiments again. Some failed, some succeeded. So after that, I think in 2011, again, I went back to Goa. The earlier part was North Goa. Then I went to South Goa. Then I lived in Palolem for 2 months down south. That was pretty interesting, but then that was not as sustainable. So in 2012, I was in such a bad situation that I was forced to take up a job. And that's something which I always tell people, that just because you've chosen to be a digital nomad doesn't mean that you owe anybody any explanation if things don't work out. If they don't, you just go back to whatever your life was. And I still don't frown upon jobs. If it wasn't for jobs, I would not have been able to save up money to do the things I've done and travel the world. And, it was all based on the savings that the jobs allowed me to do. So I'm always appreciative and grateful for jobs at all times. Even today, if required, if there are responsibilities that ask or that demand me to take up a job, I would. So I think when you have that kind of a mentality, it's very easy to take up a job when the situation demands. So in 2012, I took up a job for a year and a half. I stabilized myself a little bit. And then again, I was on my own for a year. And then the same company called me back. And I was with them for a year and a half again. So 3 more years were spent in jobs, allowing me to be a little more stable, manage a little bit more savings. And then 2014 onwards, is when I started more of my travels. 2013, 2014 was very, very interesting because there was a Twitter contest by the Colombia Tourism Board, and I just happened to participate and won that contest. And in 2014, I went back to Colombia, sponsored by the Colombian government, and spent 3 more months in South America. And that's when I again experimented with the digital nomad lifestyle in Colombia. Where I took up some projects here in India. So it was not like I was doing something illegal by working there. It was projects from India, which I was just doing on my laptop sitting in Colombia and Brazil. So Brazil happened randomly after that, but it was Colombia and Brazil for the second time. That didn't work out great because I realized that the digital nomad lifestyle has its pros and cons, right? Because when you want to really travel and explore and you are in that whole phase of, discovery, you don't want to try to balance that with work all the time. You should not have to work. You should want to work when you you should be able to work when you want to work, not that you need to work to be able to sustain yourself. So that was my learning from that trip, that I don't want to be actively working as a digital nomad. It should be about creating passive income sources. And that's the whole key about creating or becoming a real digital nomad, right? That you should not have to always work actively. If you are sitting in front of the computer the whole time or even half the day, what's the use? You'd rather just, work. So that's with that learning, I actually came back. And then 2016 actually was a little bit of a downer for me because I was again in Goa. I had an accident. It was a little bit of I don't know if it was real depression, but it was a really negative time for me. But that also taught me that, hey, I have to pick myself up and move on. And then you start appreciating the smaller things which make you happy. So at that time, then I moved and I went back to Goa. And then 2017, I was in Bangalore working. So that taught me that the digital nomad lifestyle doesn't have to be sacrosanct, that you don't have to be always working and traveling at the same time. You can also balance it out. And there are different ways of being a digital nomad today. One of them is called half and half nomad, which means that you are working for half a year and then you're a nomad for half a year. And that's what I did in 2017 when I was working in a company in Bangalore, where I worked for 6 months and then I traveled for 6 months. So first 6 months, I was just working, maximizing my savings and minimizing my expenses by basically staying in a place which was a PG, which had basic amenities. It had my food, my stay and everything. And it all came down to like 13,000 rupees, which was excellent because that was capping my entire expenditure. So if you can cap your expenditure and you maximize or increase your earnings and savings, that helps you to then have or create funds which can earn you returns in the long run, right? So these were learnings along the journey or along the way which helped me understand how these things work. So we have a slight disadvantage when we are in India because we are earning in rupees, right? Digital nomads are usually people who are Europeans or Americans who live in countries like in South Asia, Southeast Asia or South America, where there's a key concept here called geo arbitrage, which means that you're earning in a higher currency and then you're spending that in a place where the currency, where your dollar or your euro goes a long way. So that way we do have a slight disadvantage where we're earning in rupees and you can't just go and, be a digital nomad in the US, for example, earning in rupees. So these were key learnings for me along the way.
Right. And I think that's really valuable because you've actually had to learn on the go. And now you're just telling us all this because it's going to be so much easier for anyone who wants to transition into a digital nomad lifestyle. There's so much to consider, like in terms of, like you said, managing your time, like the half and half nomad thing sounds like a very feasible option, at least for someone starting out. I feel like that's kind of how I prefer to do it. Even the geo arbitrage that you mentioned, I think that makes a lot of sense because, again, like we're earning in Indian rupees. So maybe our alternatives and our options are maybe fewer, but we've still got some. So since we're on the topic of things that you've learned, are there any other mistakes that you've made that, someone who wants to transition into a location-independent lifestyle might want to consider?
Well, the first mistake I made was my grandest one, right? Of just going flat broke. So I would learn from my mistakes. The best advice I would give is don't learn from your own mistakes, learn from other people's mistakes. So learn from my own mistakes that I've made, which is if you are trying to do this kind of a lifestyle and experiment, then have enough saved up for a rainy day, or for when times may be tougher, where you know that you have enough saved up at least for the next 6 months to sustain you if things go wrong. So that allows you enough time to pick yourself up, take up a new job if required, or create other income sources in whatever way you want or you can. That would be my primary learning or where I went wrong, I would say. I would also say one more thing. This was not like a mistake for me, but it would be something which I would advise people is that, like I said earlier, don't make it something which you owe to people. That if you say that, hey, I'm a digital nomad, doesn't mean you have to be a digital nomad for life. So have that flexibility that if and when the situation demands, you can be stationary or you can be in one place. Like right now, look where the whole world is. We don't have an option. You can't be a digital nomad. You have to work from wherever you are and you are stuck there. So you are working from home. And so it's also important to build your resilience in these kind of ways where today, for me, because I have gone ahead and lived this kind of lifestyle elsewhere and failed in many ways also, I don't look at it, this as a downtime. I look at this as a great time to recuperate, to regenerate, and to create new energy. It takes a lot of energy, but you're also building and saving up and creating more better times and better funds for the future.
That's really helpful. And you rightly mentioned, like right now, we can't go anywhere. Traveling is just out the window. It's just not going to happen for some time. So in a way, I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in a way, I feel like we're all, well, not nomads, but we're all working remotely, right? So again, in the whole corporate space or in the whole workspace itself, I feel like maybe perceptions of people are also starting to change a little bit in like when they approach the freelance industry or the gig economy. So do you see that changing anytime in future? Like you also mentioned earlier when you reached out to clients when you were in Bangalore and Goa and you asked for work and they laughed in your face. But is that a trend that you see shifting?
Where you're saying the gig economy will be growing more? Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I'm not even some expert on this topic, but I think it goes without saying that the whole world is seeing this where the gig economy is growing. And it's not out of choice, but it is out of compulsion. That we are now stuck in this time and we are stuck in this situation where this is the only way you can work. So like, for example, I have a friend of mine who deals in ophthalmologic goods. And so he's had troubles with finding staff who would come and deliver the products that go from one place to another. So I suggested to him that, you know, now you have these options of these services like a Dunzo or Swiggy, which allow you to have these on-demand delivery services. This is something which we would have probably never anticipated or expected a few years ago, or wanted or needed, right? Now, because you have these services, in a way, you have that sort of agility that we never had before. So I think the gig economy is a huge boon right now for various sectors. That with this, you don't have even the current projects that I'm working on, they are purely gig based. The two key clients that I'm working with are purely based on contract. And that's how I love working, because I know that I have work for the next maybe 3 months. I don't know beyond that, but I know that there is enough work for the next 3 months. So it's great for both, because they don't have a long term commitment. And I know that I can be free after that to either travel or take on new projects. So overall, I think the gig economy is a great thing for both the employer and the employee. I wouldn't even say employer, but I would say the hirer and the gig runner, if you were to say. I don't know what the word is.
The freelancer and the client?
Yep, that's perfectly right. Yeah.
Yeah, and I also feel like maybe it's going to open up doors as well, in the sense that, you know, even after, say, brick and mortar industries resume and offices open up, I still feel like given that this is now a model that is somewhat tried and tested, even out of compulsion, maybe there's a chance that, you know, there might be a possibility of getting more gigs. There might be a possibility that people start accepting this as a more common way of life, as opposed to maybe before all of this.
Oh, 100%. Because it's happened out of compulsion, right? Like, you know, just a couple of months ago, you did not have so many people doing webinars and charging for, you know, consulting online, because people thought, hey, I can't do this. You know, who's going to buy this? Now you're forced to experiment. What's the worst case that can happen? What's the worst that can happen? It will not work. So people are usually worried about failure even before this. So trying to, failure to try is worse than trying and failing, is what they say, right? And that's exactly the scenario that was there earlier. Now you have no choice. Worst case, even if you fail, that's better than not having work. So, which is why I see the gig economy going great and booming in the future.
You know, that line that you said, failure to try is worse than trying and failing, it should literally be on a t-shirt. I feel like that's a mantra everyone should adopt.
Oh, 100%. Totally.
How many times do we cancel ourselves before even giving ourselves a chance? And I feel like this whole situation, like you rightly said, is a perfect example of, you know, what's the worst that could happen? It won't work. So that's pretty encouraging, actually, because right now, even though we're having a bit of a tough time in general, you know, with the economy being how it is and situations being how it is, it's at least something to look forward to know that, you know, there might be the possibility of, say, fresh work coming in or a different normal, so to speak.
Completely. I mean, the key thing to remember in these times is gratitude, right? Because we take so many things for granted in our daily boring lives, in the worst case, in the worst possible way to put it. We think sometimes that our lives are boring. Yes, maybe they were. But now, today, when we are going through these times, we realize that those boring times were fabulous. So it's all about perspective. and that's why, you know, we should not, like you said, cancel ourselves too easily and allow ourselves to fail. And then, you know, work towards triumph instead of success. People usually chase success way too much. I chase triumph because triumph is, I think, sweeter than success. Because if you failed and then you succeed, it makes you way more happier.
You should totally start a t-shirt line.
Triumph just is better than success.
Yes. Oh idea. My God. These are absolute gems. You were talking about generating a passive income source. You have it right here.
It's a good idea. I should consider it. If it does well, I'll pass on some royalties to you as well.
Yes, on record. I'm keeping this. Kaushal just offered to pay me royalty, guys. So I want to talk a little bit more about your journey. Like, it's been quite a while. You've experimented a lot. You have tried and failed. And you've had a lot of these experiences in between. You've managed to create a life and you're living it the way you want. But I'm sure it's, you know, it's had its own share of ups and downs. So how's it been for you so far? I'm sure there have been some fantastic moments where you've been on top of the world, literally and figuratively. But there might have been some, you know, where you just plunge down into this well of despair or whatever. Or you feel like the world has come to an end, that sort of a thing. You've already mentioned some, but strictly speaking about digital nomadism, how has it been?
That's a great question. I think if there was a psychologist listening to this talk, they would already figure that I've had quite a roller coaster life or a journey overall. Because you don't talk about triumph and you don't talk about gratitude if success has come to you easily, right? It's because you've seen it, your ups and downs, and you realize that, hey, let's make the most of what you have. So that's a key giveaway here, that I have had my ups and downs and the good times and the bad times. I would say this has always been my, mantra, that always cherish the best and forget the rest. Because you'll always have, the good time, and you'll always have some bad times. And it's always about what do you remember and what do you take from that. And failure is something which remains a failure only if you don't learn from it or turn that into triumph eventually, right? It's not failure if you learn something from it. It's only failure if you repeat it and then, you know, you blame yourself for it. So I think over the years, I would say I have started to find peace in being a nomad when I have been given that opportunity or when things have worked out, and being equally content and happy when I have been in one place, whether it is Bombay or whether it is Bangalore or whether it is Delhi, wherever, you know, the key thing for me is to fall in love with the city that you are in. So if I'm in Bombay right now, I will make the most of it and enjoy my own backyard tourism as much as, if I was in Rio, for example. So I don't see a difference between living in Bombay versus living in Rio at all. Of course, everything else, the amenities are different, but it ultimately comes down to your attitude towards your surroundings, right? There are a zillion things which you can discover in your own city and feel like a traveler or a tourist in your own city if you want to. So that way, you know, there are way too many ways in which you can make the most of even the challenging times or not perfect times, if you were to say.
I completely understand. Like, you know, you kind of need to make peace with your surroundings and make the most of what you have in order to really...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Great. I don't even look at it as like a consolation. I look at it as this is now. This is the present. They don't call it the present for nothing, right? You make the most of what it is.
Right. It's just one thing that I wanted you to help clarify. A lot of people actually glamorize the whole lifestyle of being able to be wherever you are and work. But being a part of the lifestyle, I think you and I both know that there are some unsavory sides to it, a side that you really don't want to that we don't talk about. If someone were to want to get into this, then what is something that they should probably look out for, you know, be careful of or be prepared for?
Yeah, again, I mean, I'm just trying to phrase this right. But yeah, I mean, there are pros and cons even about the digital nomad lifestyle. I mean, this is discussed perhaps the most among people and it is debated a lot. And I think it's just a way of life. It is just a lifestyle, right? So it is up to you. If it doesn't suit you, change it. If it's something, the whole idea is experimentation. And the idea behind experimentation is you are open to prospects and possibilities that you may or may not like it. So unless you try it, you will never know whether you like it or not, right? And it may turn out that it's not for you. Like the way I explained about my Colombia trip, where I was enjoying it until I started working. And then there were so many client changes and it was such an annoying experience overall that it started ruining my travel experience. And then I realized this is not for me. So I stopped taking new projects after that. And I just continued working and, you know, made the most of that. So if it is, I think it comes down to balancing and figuring out what do you really want out of it, right? It should not be just to make your Instagram feed look cool that, hey, I'm living everywhere. If it doesn't come inherently and if it's not something which you really want to do, you'll never be happy because then you'll be doing things to show others and not because you want to do it. So I think, so that's something, so happiness is always intrinsic. It's never something which comes from outside, right? So you got to figure out whether your experiments are some things which you want to continue doing, if you see value and if it gives you joy. If it doesn't give you joy, change it. Change it to the best of your extent and possibilities. And also the fact that we have to remember that it's a privilege to be even able to do something like this. So again, it comes down to understanding privilege and understanding gratitude that, hey, come on, I mean, at least you can do this. You know, there are people who possibly can't even do that. So often we compare ourselves to the people who have more than us and never with people who have less than us. So that's a great way that I sort of, you know, make my peace with things if they don't work out sometimes.
I think it's very interesting because it's a very personal journey, right? This whole digital nomadism, and it's so subjective to one person's tastes and preferences and lifestyles and just the way of living. And correct. Like you rightly said, it's like you have to be ready to change at a moment's notice. If it's not working, then you change it. Or if it's not for you, then you leave it. And you have to be prepared, I think, for failure, because if something's not working, then the first thing you're going to count that as is a failure. So I think it takes a lot of making mental peace with your decisions and really moving ahead with that.
Exactly. Because if you are going to be, you know, living like the rat race again, what was the point at quitting the rat race and joining another one? If you're just trying to make it like somebody else who's made it, right? It's all about whether you're making it in your definition and you are happy about it, or are you doing it because somebody else is better than you?
That is actually something to ponder on. Food for thought, I would say. It does take a lot of, you know, questioning yourself before you take such a... And it is a massive life decision. So definitely some questions that need to be answered before getting into it. And it's good to know that, you know, it can be this way. It doesn't always have to be white sand beaches or...
Rosy. And yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Sometimes it is. But sometimes it's also amazing when you're in your own city, right? I mean, I think the most amazing moments in life are not necessarily the ones which you... visualize as perfect scenarios, but these small fleeting moments where you are like, wow, that was perfect. And it was usually because you shared that with somebody you cared about, or, you know, shared it with a loved one or whatever. And it's always about people and less about places.
Absolutely.
Very rare that only a place will give you joy. It's usually when it's a combination of a place and people.
It's usually the story that comes out over there, right? And it's usually a shared experience, at least for me. I've always been that way. And
completely. I mean, and that's something you can even find perhaps in your own city. You don't have to go too far for having these amazing experiences.
Ultimately, I think it boils down to knowing what you want, knowing yourself, and just being able to change at a moment's notice. So that's super important.
Yeah.
Sweet. So again, it's a very pertinent question, but I'm sure you've been asked this a lot of times. I'm asking you all of these questions right now, so I don't know how many times you've had to answer this in your life. But I think there are so many people who want to move out of the rat race and move into a remote lifestyle without having it become a rat race. And since you've been doing this for close to 12 years now, what are some of the ways that one could do this? What are the options one can explore?
I would say start as local as possible, the way I started, right? My first experiment was Bangalore. Then I went to Goa. It's not like I went straight to Bali or straight to Brazil, because you should be closer home. That if something doesn't work out, you can always fall back on your existing system or way of life. So play it safe initially. Don't just go overboard and, you know, give everything up and say, hey, I'm going to change my life overnight. I mean, unless you go through that kind of a situation where you need or that kind of a intervention is required in your life to improve and better your life, and you are ready for the pros and cons of what may come out of the situation. But otherwise, I would say play it safe. Go somewhere where you are comfortable or where you've been wanting to go. Ideally, someplace where you're familiar. So I started with Goa because I had been there five times before that. And I knew exactly where I wanted to stay for a longer time, or Bangalore, where I found, like I said, the house of my dreams, where I was like, wow, I can't believe I'm staying in this house. Now it was a duple and a fabulous place where I actually hosted couch surfers. I made a ton of amazing friends. And that whole experience of hosting people then eventually helped me be a part of the couch surfing community and then go out and, you know, embrace it where other couch surfers invited me and I could stay in these amazing locales. So I would say start as nearer as possible to your city of residence, and then be prepared for the best case and the worst case, or the worst case scenario.
So there are some careers that can obviously be molded into from a 9-to-5 to a kind of a digital nomad lifestyle. What are some skill sets or some potential careers that you would recommend? You know, like if someone wanted to switch, then are there any that you would consider easier to transition from?
Well, right now we're on the subject of specifically digital nomads, right? You don't necessarily have to be a digital nomad. Like I have a friend I have multiple friends who are into yoga, who are, you know, yoginis and people who are teaching yoga around the world. And that's what they do. So they are not technically digital nomads, but they are nomads. The digital part comes only when it comes to enabling it. So they are digital enabled nomads, I would say, not digital nomads. So you can always be something like that as well. If you have a job which you can do anywhere. And I think in the future, pretty much all vocations and all jobs are going to be things which you can do anywhere. I think it comes down to human survival, right? That especially in times like these, we are now faced with these basic existential questions where you're thinking about survival, you're thinking about the whole human race, and you're thinking about where did we go wrong and what can we do. In these situations, it's important to talk about and figure out, why should I live a life which has just been designed in a certain way? Why can't I look at it in a different way? That's the whole idea of lifestyle experiments, right? That what if I did things this way or that way? It all comes down to that. So I think pretty much any job, whether you're a teacher, whether you are a yoga person, and or somebody like me who's purely digital. I mean, I'm into design and I'm into content and all of that, which I can't do without a laptop. But in fact, I'm trying my best to not be dependent on screens to generate income. So even I'm always thinking about what are other ways I can create different income sources, where I don't have to be, screen dependent. Be independent, don't be screen dependent.
The one with the t-shirt, guys.
So these kind of things are the kind of questions which I'm always thinking about. So I literally have a chart where I list down my existing skill sets, things where I can improve myself, and things that can turn into revenue sources. And so I always work with this. This is literally my desktop. It's on my wallpaper. It's on whiteboard and all of that, where it always reminds me that this is who I am and this is what I want to be. And I think these kind of vision boards is something which I always recommend people should use, which will help you to get towards your goals if you really want to change or experiment with different lifestyles.
So what you're saying is basically just know yourself, know what you can monetize, know what can be a potential income source, and accordingly start transitioning or moving into a lifestyle that you wish.
Exactly. And times like these allow you to do these kind of experiments shamelessly, right? Because everybody is right now fighting for survival. So nobody's going to judge you because you're trying something crazy, because we are in a time where it's a privilege to be alive.
Right. Yep. That's great advice, actually, and definitely something worth taking back and working on. So if there's anyone who really wants to kind of move out of a rat race, so to speak, and not get into another rat race, but still live location independent, then talking about the whole digital aspect of it, as well as the digital enabled aspect of it, really opens up doors.
Exactly. Yeah. Think of a single thing which you can't do as a nomad. You know, you should be able to do pretty much anything. Maybe if you look at something specific, there may be some challenges. But I'm sure if it comes down to those existential or survival based points, and if you look at it from that perspective, anything is possible. Or you just create different revenue sources. I'm always thinking about, you know, what else can I create as a revenue source? So I think that's something which everybody should always think about.
I think that's the beauty of being location independent as well, right? You're not bound by rules. You're not put in a box. You can do whatever you want. It's just boundless. The opportunities are endless and potential is also limitless. So it's ultimately
exactly.
It's up to us. If we want to do it bad enough, we should be able to figure out and just get it done.
Totally.
That's very helpful. And I feel like this entire conversation has been peppered with gems, not just the t-shirt ones, but also like a lot of really, really good advice that will be super useful to anyone wanting to start out. This has been so, so, I don't know, enriching, if I can say. So I just want to ask you if there's anything you want to share, any anecdote, any story, any feedback, any thoughts, absolutely anything.
So the one thing which I have hugely benefited from, and it is perhaps one of the few sites which I actually pay for, is a website called Nomad List by Peter Levels. He's a guy who's, like I said, Tim Ferriss is this guy who has been like the godfather of the digital nomad lifestyle. If he was the godfather, I would say the successor is Peter Levels, who started Nomad List. And this is a great website which basically shows you visually which are the best cities to live in and work in. So it started off as an Excel sheet, literally, and I was one of those people who actually fed in that data in that Excel sheet at that time. So I've seen that vision materialize from there to what it is today. It's one of the best websites on the internet, my favorite website on the internet. So that will definitely inspire you to get out of your comfort zone and consider, even if you are, for example, if you're living in Bangalore, you might think about, why am I in Bangalore? Why am I not in Halebid? Or why am I not in, I don't know, Shravanbelagola, you know, I'm just giving you random names. But or if you're in Bombay, why am I not in Nasik, for example? Why can't I go and work from there? Smaller city, better life, you know, lower expenditures. So that's the whole idea about the digital nomad lifestyle, that if you can work and generate the same or more amount of money and spend less in a place, that is, in a way, geo-arbitrage. Because you're going to a place where your expenditure is lesser and your income is rising. And this website really helps you do that. And it always inspires me. When I look at that, I'm always thinking, okay, I want to go and live in Bali for a month. Okay, I want to go and live in Quito for a whole month. Quito I've actually done. Bali I want to do. So this is one website or one gem which I would recommend. If I were to leave you with one thing, I would be like, be on Nomad List and be a community fiend on this website. And it will change your perspective on how this lifestyle can be.
That's helpful. That's very, very helpful. And that's not even sponsored. So coming from you, that
it's not even sponsored. I sound like a salesperson. I mean, I'm just a fan.
No, I mean, if it's helped you for so long, then I'm sure there's so much to offer over there. I think anyone wanting to transition would definitely have to check it out. And I'll be checking it out as well. That just brings me to the end of all of my questions. I think I've asked you everything that I could have possibly wanted to know. And it's been very helpful, very, very, it's been amazing, actually, having you here. This whole discussion has kind of changed my own perspective of how to look at things over here. And I'm sure it's really going to be very helpful to listeners as well. So thanks so much, Kaushal. I'm so glad you could join in today. It means a lot.
Pepe, thank you so much for having me. I mean, I would say the same thing about you. And like I said, I love the podcast. I have been a fan and I can't wait for this to come out and share it with everyone. Keep doing this. It's fantastic. Like I said, it's my favorite medium. So all the best to you. Like I always say, shine on, travel on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pepe.
And for all of you listening, you can go and check out what Kaushal does at www.exoticgringo.com. That's his travel blog. If you want to see more about his journey as a digital nomad, as a location independent professional, then hop over to www.kaushal.page/nomad for a full list of resources that will definitely be very, very helpful. I hope you enjoyed listening to this pep take. It was my first one, and I wanted to tackle something that actually comes up quite a lot. So if you're planning on moving to a location-independent lifestyle or are just curious, I'm sure this one would have been very, very helpful. As always, I welcome feedback, so feel free to drop me a line on my Instagram at peppytravelgirl or hit me up on my website at www.peppytravelgirl.com. Till then, stay tuned for a brand new episode, which I will be publishing very, very soon. Travels, Tales and Takes with Preeti brings to you tales of wonder from lands far and near, stories of inspiration from people ever so dear, and a little bit of me, Preeti, also known as Peppy Travel Girl. I hope you're all staying safe and are staying indoors and are doing well, and I hope you have a good day or a night ahead. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.